Here we are, Jimmy D and the Wolf live. And today we have a very special guest, Kit Wakely, who was so, bravo, Kit. And we're going to be talking about Kit, his music, and specifically he's got a new album that came out, I believe in May is when it dropped. It's called Symphony of Sinners and Saints. And this album has topped, this album and single from the album has is a five-time Billboard chart topper, and different genres as well top the classical charts, album charts, and the classical crossover, and then three of the songs, hard rock, digital. So those are different genres, and the same album topping that. And it also has Joe Satriani on it. So it is just a goldmine of wonderful sounds. And so welcome, Kit. So glad to have you on here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That's I like that gold mine. I'll have to steal that from you.
Sure. Absolutely. So, you know, I guess how our paths crossed through a mutual friend of yours, Mike Reeves, right?
That's right. That's right. I need to talk to him sometime, see how he's doing.
I have not spoken with him in a few years. I heard he moved to Oklahoma. I don't know what city, but I think
he's getting ready to get married.
I did see that he had a significant other that he was with. So yeah, so you grew up with him, I believe.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Same high school, I would say. High school anyway. And he said what he told me about you that I recall was that you were this kick butt trumpet player in high school.
Yeah, I kind of forget those days, but yeah.
So you started on trumpet. I know that. I mean, that based from that information. And then I read a bit of some of your interviews that you've done for this album. And you said you were initially inspired by Superman album, or Superman movie and the soundtrack. And
I liked all the big scores at that time. I have no idea why I was listening to all the same music as everyone else, but I always took the time to play the soundtracks from all those big movies.
Well, Jimmy, maybe you go ahead and ask. Jimmy had a question for you.
Well, that's, you know, listening to your stuff, I'm the worst at checking out new music, man. I was blown away by your stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Seriously, it's incredible.
I appreciate it.
And listening to it, I was like, man, I wonder what this cat grew up on. Like, what did this guy grow up listening to?
Well,
it's such a big bag of things that you hear. As a musician, I hear all these different influences, and it's like.
Yeah. Mom listened to Elvis. Dad listened to that old country. And then, you know, whatever was on the radio in the mornings from, you know, the pops and rock stations. And then, you know, you're just in bands all these years. I'm sure you guys know. I mean, when you're in a band and you're playing everything from clubs to proms to whatever, you got to stay up with what people want to hear. So you're learning 40, 50, 60 songs at any given time. And eventually that just, you know, you get influenced by a lot. And so I think that's where it all comes from, to be honest with you, is just that Heinz 57 influence over the years. If it sounds great, in fact, every song I have, there's an Easter egg or two of a song that influenced me along the way. So
yeah, I think you have to listen to it a number of times to really peel back all those layers. And I haven't listened to it nearly as often as I will and as often as I want to really digest all of that. So the one thing that popped into my mind, and you know, the mixing of, it's primarily an instrumental album, Symphony of Sinners and Saints, for our listeners, please check it out. It's on streaming. And it's a primarily instrumental but has a choir, and there's at least one song with the vocal hook, vocal lyrics, which I really liked. And it kind of made me think a little bit of gospel. I don't know if that would be appropriate, I loved it. Absolutely loved that. In fact, I mean, I loved every song, but each one is different. But the one thing, predominantly, I guess it's kind of a very cinematic, with the orchestra, with the London Symphony Orchestra, Royal Harmonic Orchestra, I guess. Is that the correct term for the?
The Royal Philharmonic.
Yeah. And so it's an actual, you know, symphony playing. Mm-hmm. And I know you recorded at Abbey Road. And and you, the one of the charts that you top, well, two album charts were classical related. One was classical, the other was classical crossover. And we've talked on this podcast about classical music having a problem that the average customer or the average client of classical music orchestras is getting older by the year. And is primarily, you know, patrons of that are, you know, I think the average age is close to 70 now. They go to symphonies. Yeah. But because we did a podcast on it and I did some research, and in over 10 years, the average age of the ticket holders went up 10 years. So that's only a matter of realizing that in a matter of time, they're not going to have any fans, so to speak. And to me, I always felt that the only way to get younger folks involved and get a large an audience is to do, and movie scores is one way to do it. And to do it with like what you're doing, bringing in some different disparate influences, or I guess music like the hard rock influence. And I mean, is that something that consciously crossed your mind
when you? I the first time I ever heard any of my music played with an orchestra, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I liked orchestra. Of course, I liked film scores. But the first time I actually heard the Macedonian Orchestra play one of my songs and for the rest of the session, I was just, I mean, it's one of the most powerful sounds over here. And I hate to geek out over that because I'm a rock guy. I'm a pop guy, you know. But when you take the influence of rock music, which is so powerful, I mean, what do you hear? Sporting events. And, I mean,
absolutely,
they want to get you going.
Absolutely.
You take those two powers, you put them together. So what I purposely do, and it's odd, I mean, the traditionalists, some traditionalists in the classic world, are, they just brutalize me. And others are like, kind of what you said, oh, great, this can bring in, you know, a whole new audience. And what I've been asked by a lot of the more traditionalists is the song structure. I use a secular strong structure, intro, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, you know, go out with the guitar. So, because I feel like that will appeal to people more than movements. And, you know, I mean, we're too ADD in our society today. We want to hear more and more and more. And so, again, I get just to forgive the term, but it's a logistic term or legitimate term. I get bastardized by some of the community. And then I'll get someone like Cliff Masterson from the Royal Philharmonic, you know, the conductor, he does the Royal Philharmonic and the London Philharmonic, and man, we just clicked. I mean, he loves it, you know. So you're right. I'm playing Carnegie later this in October, and I am a little concerned about some of the people who are going to buy tickets. They might not. They might not appreciate what they're getting ready to show up for.
Yeah, I saw that you had planned to do that in 2020, but of COVID, of course, interrupted all our lives, and so you had. Sure. But you did do a full-on concert down in your hometown or close in Oklahoma.
Yes.
And that I saw some of the photos from that on social media, and it seemed like it was a huge success based on it.
We were the first. I didn't realize it. I didn't think anything about it. But the thing that kept hitting, if you will, lack a better phrasing, the headlines, if you will, the buzz around here in the media was it was the first concert to just kick open the doors for the general public, and it was. So I was blessed with that one. We pulled it off really, really well. I say we. The production guys sure made me look good.
Awesome. Well, so you went to Abbey Road Studios, a legendary Abbey Road Studios, and you recorded the Royal Philharmonic there. And but first, I remember, I've been following you on social media, and I remember when you did do the Midnight in Macedonia album, and which was 2018 when that came.
Yeah. Man, you're good.
So that was your first, based on what you were just saying, was the first time you really got involved with a symphony orchestra with your music.
Yeah, I had experimented with I was told about like the Hungarian and the Romanian orchestras because they're affordable, and I'd done some stuff like that remotely, just set them the scores. But I, you know, those were for licensing, and but never had I walked into a studio and, you know, there's 110 people waiting for you to tell them what to do. So yeah, that was my first stint.
Yeah. So Macedonia, I think there was a mention of that. How did you end up with In Macedonia?
I knew they were responsible for a lot of big film scores. I knew that they were affordable. And I also knew people, for some reason, I'm not really sure what the draw is, but I knew that musicians from all over the world wanted to be in that orchestra. You know, there's only so many spaces for you in New York and London and LA and Hollywood Strings and stuff like that. So a lot of them go there. And there's just such a fine degree, or maybe even politics, to keep you out of those other orchestras, union, whatever it might be. So I knew that was A, very affordable, B, incredible musicians, and C, one heck of a resume. So that's, you know, I thought that was lofty at the time. And so, yeah, that's the reason I chose them, and it worked.
Awesome. So that you, how long were you there to record in 20, or maybe you recorded 17 or 18 that came out?
Recorded 17, released 18. Yeah, we weren't there that long in Skopje. I would say a week. I think we recorded for 4.5 days between the choir and the orchestra.
So, as a rock musician myself, and I was, how do you go to? I mean, preparing a score for the music you write for a 110 piece orchestra to play. How do you approach that?
If I understand your question correctly, you know, you're familiar with all the DAWs. I know that you probably know Pro Tools and Logic and Ableton and all that really well. as you know, with like Pro Tools, it does a lot of the scoring for you. I have a couple other scoring softwares that I throw it in. And so I'll get about 90% of it ready. And then I found a really, really good gentleman who does a lot of scoring for movies and things. He helps me put that little 10%, you know, if you really want to communicate this with the orchestral players and the conductor, and you're all on the same page, he'll help me tweak some things along the way. And then you send them the scores, they print it off, and you show up, and man, they make it very easy for you there and at Abbey.
Wow, that must be, I mean, I can only imagine, like you said, that it was a first time you heard somebody play your music. Having that powerful of a machine, if you will, I mean, it's musical, but it's still kind of a machine that has to be controlled, and to have it under that power doing music you had written, I can only imagine what that feels like.
I'm not an emotional guy, but I really did. I thought, you know, my wife was with me at the producer's table. She looked over and she said, "I think you're about to cry." I said, "Well, I think I am too. I mean, that I never heard anything like that," because you've done a lot of stuff. And Jimmy, I apologize. I don't know all your background and things, but I know you guys have used VSTs, and you can get, when I do some licensing stuff, which I don't do anymore, doesn't pay anything, but I would use all kinds of VSTs, and most people couldn't tell the difference there between what we do now. There's a big difference here in that live in your VSTs. So I'm not doing a very good job of articulating the power, but knowing that it is hard to pull an emotional, you know, like, I guess, of a tear out of me is very difficult. To tell you that that's almost where I went would probably make my point.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I would. I'd be probably crying like a baby in that scenario. So so then you did, and you got your toe in the water, so to speak, and had a good response from that. And, but you didn't, I mean, you did mention that one of the reasons that you did the Macedonia was cost issues, but it seems like you didn't have that consideration for this album, because you went to Abbey Road and you went to the Philharmonic, the London Symphony, which is probably not on the economy scale. I'm just guessing. So you decided to go all in. You only live once, kind of thing.
That's exactly. I mean, I'm glad you said that. I mean, again, I appreciate getting to talk to you and Jimmy, because I know that you've been there, done that. You're a vet, and you've done so much music. You get it. And we have peers, and this is not a knock at them. Rather, it's a brethren comment. We have peers. We put music out there. We go, okay, let's put it on Spotify, and maybe somebody will pick it up. Or we talk to some kind of halfway PR people who can, you know, kind of get you out there. But I just wanted to lay it all on the line. So I wanted to do this, and I want to do it right. And hey, let the chips fall where they may. It a lot of work, but yes, it wasn't as expensive as I thought. And you know, sometimes you get what you pay for. I can't describe you, and I come back to you as peers now because I know you guys have done all kinds of work. There are five guys in the engineer booth with you, and each one of them have a job. And so I'm used to sorting tracks by myself, going through, picking the best takes. When I walk out of there, there's a spreadsheet of every take. They've already picked which ones are ready to go for you. It is the most customer-friendly, Chick-fil-A, incredible experience. I don't know if I want to record anywhere else, and I recorded in some great studios. So expensive, but wow, is it worth it? I think it may be.
Did you record only the orchestra? I mean, I read some. I didn't find any mention that you recorded anything other than at Labby Road. Did you record everything, like the guitars and everything?
No. So we did. I did the choir and the orchestra and the orchestral drums there. And then Joe and Andy Timmons. Andy Timmons and Joe Satriani are best friends. They run together with Steve Vai and Nita.
I know. Yeah, they're both. As a guitar player, I mean, they're both of those names are – Andy Timms is just as famous as Joe for a guitar player. I mean,
and so they just did – actually, Andy did go to a mutual recording studio to do his tracks and then – or his track. And then Joe did his from his home studio. And so the drums were done here in Oklahoma City. I've got all the faith in the world and in the process, you know. So the rock stuff was done over here.
In Oklahoma City, I thought I read it was done in Dallas.
Some of it was done in Dallas, yes. Some of it was done in Dallas. The drums were done here in Oklahoma City. Okay. I just had a lot of faith in the drum engineer and what they did. And in fact, when Joe and I are going to do an EP with some other guitarists we can talk about in a minute, and he heard the drums, and he was just like, Why would we use any other drummer? I mean, this guy's a phenomenal guy, and he's in your backyard. So
Jimmy, please jump in. I'm monopolizing the question here. So
I'm loving it, man.
So that leads me to you know, how do you get Joe Satriani on your? I mean, there's I'm sure there's a story there, and whatever you can share. But I mean, that is a Joe Satriani. I mean, that's Joe Satriani.
Yeah, exactly. And it, first of all, he's a very nice guy, very approachable. Remember, I said I was just going to put it all out there. I sent an email just saying, hey, look, this is Cliff Masterson. Look at his resume. It's Abbey Road. It's, you know, the Royal Philharmonic, pretty much the same as, I mean, you just kind of got to know the history, the same as the London Philharmonic. This is what it is. I've recorded with some of your friends. And he said yes. And I thought he was just going to like play a guitar, you know, guitar solo here and there. And he was like, he got a hold of me and said, hey, I hear some other stuff. Do you mind? And I'm like, do whatever you want. I would like to keep a vibe of the rhythm parts and things like that. And he was, but I said, if you come up with something totally different, that's fine too. And you heard it. I mean, Conflicted and Forgive Me are just, you know, so we went right back and we did three more songs right after that. That we'll have on an EP, but it's a matter of just asking. In fact, I asked Steve Vai, and he just couldn't squeeze it in. And I always wanted to play with Tommy Lee, and so I asked him. Well, he had an album coming out, and we didn't want to delay the project, so I just made up in my mind. Okay, fine, we're going to do an EP later. I'll go back and ask Tommy, and I'll ask Steve later. And so.
Now I feel that you're in that world, and now, you know, you've worked with them, and the result, number one album, even for Joe, I would think, you know, he plays on a song that goes to number one on the charts, Billboard charts, you know, that's the big chart. That's not some, you know, pretend chart.
Yeah.
That's going to get his attention, I would think. You know, he doesn't have, not every song he puts out goes to number one. So now you've proven, and now you're there. You've leveled up, I would assume. I mean, there's.
Yeah. The best compliment, and I don't expect anyone else to understand it, the best compliment I've ever think I've ever gotten, other than the affirmation that I got from Abbey Road and Cliff Masterson, was I am getting ready to switch social media companies. And the company I contacted, I knew that they handled some pretty high-end clients, and I didn't think they would probably even pick me up. But it was interesting. The guy called, we talked, and he said, man, Joe, we actually handled Joe, and Joe spoke brilliantly of you. I'm like, oh, wow. If that's what people are saying behind your back, you've done something
nice.
Right.
Nice.
And but, yes, Joe's very kind. Yes, he signed right back up to do an EP, and it's led to some bigger things that are coming up. I'm really excited about it.
Congrats, man.
That's, I appreciate it.
It's great stuff, and you know, and you're moving the ball. You know, my take on it is, I mean, you're making classical rock. Classical albums that rock hard, and I'm sure he sees that as much as anybody. Like, this guy is really, and that's probably why you're getting some of the kickback or pushback from some of the, you know, old classical music fans. Probably moving the ball. Like when Muddy Waters was doing some of his heavier stuff towards the end of his career, the blues purists hated it.
Yeah. Well, Joe's agent, Joe's manager, not his agent, sent me a clip. I knew he hit Guitar Worlds, things like that. But outside of those articles, someone else, I guess they were talking about fresh new takes on things, and they referenced Joe and I. Why can't more people do what Joe and Kid are doing, you know, in these projects? I'm like,
yes,
really? I got to get your whole world saying, why can't we do more Joe and Kit? I'm thinking, all right, yeah. So I've got
That is so cool, Kit. I love it.
Thank you. I guess that was a little braggadocious, but
no. I mean,
brilliant stuff, man.
You deserve it. I mean, it's right there. You can't deny the performance. So we do have a question here. I'm going to put it on the chart. So Otto Westerling says, would you be able to reproduce the studio recording into a live version, or is that too far-fetched? We've done it. You're doing it in Carnegie Hall.
Yes, I did it in Oklahoma City. I feel like live I feel like live, there's a whole lot more energy. I mean, it sends chills up your spine when those big drums are hitting, and you're just, live, it is powerful. It is powerful. We get a lot of incredible feedback. I think I signed when people stick around for 2 hours to take pictures and take autographs, and you know,
nice.
It came across really well. So yeah, we definitely can pull that off live.
Awesome. Jimmy, you got another question?
Well, there's a lot of a lot of what I heard was Tim and I talk about this frequently. Of many recordings now are getting further and further away from what it feels like to sit in a room with a live band. As we all know, you know, everything's on the grid and everybody plays everything right here, and the dynamics are there. And that was the first thing I got from listening to your stuff immediately. It was just like, bam, you know, there's all these peaks and valleys, and it builds up and it comes down, and it all points in between. And so, you know, cheers for that, because just the level of musicality inside of the compositions themselves is just off the charts.
I appreciate it. The thing I like about the orchestral, you know, the orchestral players are not playing with a click track. Yes, you know, the conductor's, you know, conducting to a click track. So you have ebb and flow. Even though you have that drum beat kicking, you have some fluctuation, which I think helps a lot, and that's something that all the other instrumentalists have to pay attention to. Otherwise, it can, you know, when you have string arpeggiations going in Joe's or whatever guitar player is doing their arpeggiations, and it's got to be right there in time. So I feel like we cheat, but we get a lot of that flexibility rather than just the grid.
Yeah, it absolutely cross.
I have one unrelated, almost music unrelated, but in life and accomplishment unrelated. One of the interviews that I read about you mentioned that you talking about self-actualization and the things like, you know, playing with Satriani and playing at Carnegie Hall, which is going to be this October, and Abbey Road. I mean, Abbey Road Studios. These are all things that most musicians, I think, would put on their, you know, life bucket list to achieve. And you've achieved two of them, and you're going to, you've scheduled to do the third one. And you mentioned in one of the articles, if I understood it correctly, that you imagined that and self-actualized that. You want to talk a little bit about that? Because that's, I think, I love that, and I want to do more of it myself, and I believe it's powerful. And so I would like to hear you talk.
Oh, that's kind. You and I, we've all been around enough musicians. We like to embellish our resume. You know, we have friends who've said they've hit billboards, or they'll buy streams, or they'll buy likes, or, you know, or they'll inflate their resume. And there's a kernel of truth to it, let's face it. But when you start fact checking, sometimes people aren't even embellishing, it's just made up. So I feel like in today's world, if you say something, someone better be able to look it up. Someone better be able to fact check. And what you don't want is someone to fact check and go, oh, and, you know, fill in the blank. So I feel like your integrity is everything. And I'm not perfect. I will do everything I can to, let's face it, I can't say embellish, but I'll inflate, I'll hit the highlights of my resume to put my first foot forward. But what I see is that if I say I want to record at Abbey Road, two things happen. One, I've said it out loud. I've said it in front of people. And I don't want people coming back to me 2 years later. Weren't you going to? And then, you know, the chuckles. So I'm too insecure, too thin skinned. So I don't want to hear that. And then it holds me accountable to, if I said I was going to do it, I'm going to kill myself trying. And so, you know, why not? I mean, someone asked, you know, how did you get, you know, like on the next project, how did you get these people to agree? Or how did you, and I'm just, it's kind of like when I was trying to ask girls to the prom in high school, you ask enough, one of them's going to say yes. And so you just keep going until you check those bucket items, you know?
I love it.
I have a question. When you're composing, do you have like a favorite instrument to like the ground level of composition? Is there an instrument that has birthed more compositions for you than any other? Or,
you know, if I'm in a, you know, piano is always a good feel to start with, but usually it's somewhere in the synth world that I start with. That's, you know, I usually start with piano and strings. I start to build up, and by the time it's all said and done, I may have pulled out the piano and it doesn't exist. And yeah, by the time I throw in, you know, some rhythm guitar, and, you know, where'd that all go? But yeah, I usually start out with piano, sometime with some electronica, and again, who knows what it looks like at the end.
Yeah, so the creativity in your synth, I mean, I'm not that knowledgeable about synth, but it certainly seemed very incredibly creative and very interesting.
The tone, thank you, I appreciate it. Sound selection
was awesome on the stuff that wasn't organic. I mean, I thought it was amazing. We've had almost a half hour of your time, and I think that's probably a good sweet spot. If you have anything more you want to say, we can wrap it up in a bit here. Jimmy, you have anything you want to say?
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, thank you for having me. I mean, you guys make this easy. I do, you know, a lot of interviews. Sometimes it's just question, answer. And you guys make this easy. You make it more conversation. We're just talking what we do. So I appreciate that. It makes it a lot easier.
All right. So before we close off, the album is Symphony of Sinners and Saints by Kit Wakely, 5 times Billboard chart topper. And check it out on your nearest streaming. And thank you very much, Kit. And best of luck with this new project with Joe and his friends. Just all the best to you.
Hey, thank you so much. You're way too good to me. I appreciate that.
All right. See y'all later.
You bet, man. Thank you.